ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals. Welcome to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts and iTunes. My name is Damien P. Donnelly, and I am the host and producer of this show, and delighted that you have joined us for Episode 7, Season 4. This weekend on the show, we have six fantastic poets who will bring us nodding thistles, origami birds, flowers erupting in the jungle, old two-story brick buildings and frogs, the sun warm and cold, and an open window inspired by Henri Cartier-Bresson, whose foundation I got to live right next to in the 14th arrondissement of Paris before it moved to its now chicer location of Le Marais. Today we are settling down in Limerick here in Ireland before we take flights off with those origami birds to England, three stops in America and one in India. This is Eat the Storms, and I hope you enjoy the show. To start the show today, I'm going to read a poem that I wrote last summer while walking along the nearby beach of Rush here in Fingal in County Dublin in Ireland. Caught in a claw. Crab shuffles over shell. Slides backward into sand like sun behind star. Light falls. Pink grows paler. Sand becomes sponge, and I wonder if the echo of that shell is a sponge for all I no longer hear. For all I no longer hear. A sound wave shuffling just behind the light of my ear. A reverberation come to settle in the shell of this shore. Like the kiss from her lips, I still feel pressing into mine. I shuffle backwards, lean in to all that's no longer light. Catch another reverb of a breath I lost at the top of a dying volcano. Flames blow out like stars when light grows too bright. Perhaps in claw of crab, paler now than pink, shuffling downwards, is a sponge of mine, home to a memory of a sunrise that's still to reveal a breath I was too slow to press into lung. Worse still, we kiss. Worse still, we kiss. Worse still, we kiss. Worse still. For my first guest today on Eat the Storms, I am delighted to catch a ride on one of her origami birds to take us from here in Ireland across the sea to Scarborough in England, a location that suits her perfectly as she professes to be happiest by or in the sea. Her debut chapbook was published by Dreek and is called How to Be a Dressing Gown. She has had work appearing in Spelt, Dreamcatcher, Pandemic, Nymphs and Thugs, Neurological, Blackbrow Poetry's recent Christmas and Winter Edition Volume 2, and Ice Flow Press's Pandemic Love Anthology. I am so delighted to welcome to Eat the Storms for the very first time, though hopefully not the last, the incredible Charlotte Oliver.
Hello everyone, I'm Charlotte Oliver, and I'd like to start by thanking Damien for inviting me onto his wonderful podcast. I've loved listening to it over the past year. It's such a brilliant way of connecting the poetry community, especially in these dark times, and I'm thrilled to be sharing my work on it. I'm going to read four poems today. All are from my chapbook, How to Be a Dressing Gown, published by Dreek. My first poem is about my childhood memories of watching my ever-beautiful mum getting ready to go out in the 1980s. Mum gets ready. She unties her housewife self and hangs her on the back of the kitchen door, ready for the morning. I scurry after into the cool, quiet swallow of their bedroom, where muted, matched shades create a family out of curtains, bedspread and cushions placed central to the pillows. Toes bed deep into carpet, like cress seeds into cotton wool. Her underskirt and cami all lace-trimmed pearlescence in material I don't really know. My film star at her dressing table, the red-lined jewellery box dribbles out her pearls. Chanel number 5, blue eyeshadow flicked on, lipstick circles a held yawn, curling tongs lick the ends of her silky hair under for a smooth second before the hot-smelling click. Hairspray hiss, on with the dress, there she is. I'm into bed with a kiss, then I hear her high heels puncture the path outside my window and tap away into the distance. I fall asleep, imagining they are getting louder again. This next poem is about my musical hero and constant companion since my teenage years. It's called My Friend Prince. My friend Prince, we were inseparable. You filled my ears, my t-shirt fronts, genius musician who was instrumental in the education of my soul, in the ways of sex, drugs and rock and roll. An alien from somewhere exotic, a planet purple paisleyed, circled by rings erotic, Disney doe eyes, fuzzy top lip, often naked but for a riff of quietly grooving body hair, accompanying the eye steadily down there. You were frozen over spilled CD shells in my beloved Fiesta's footwell. You defined cool, you still do, despite having the same name as owner matching Alsatians with chains on our old estate's far side that I liked because it smelled deep fried. My friend fancied you, but I did not. You were a bit pervy and too short, but as a friend, I loved you, and still do. How you match and raise my moods with your soul-touching, rocking tunes, always with a streak of rude. With your funk and your spunk, I'd have liked to pop you in my pocket where you'd have made mischief with my handkerchief. You funky little cockerel, strutting and rutting over the stage at Main Road, where you were even tinier. An assured lover, stroking guitar strings until they rang out, sang out. My indignation at so many others there too. How dare they love you? You were only ever a thought or button pressed away. And then it snowed one April day. You died, I cried, and sometimes still do. I miss you and all that was left to learn. All the other positions for one. The day I don't move my feet to the opening bars of Alphabet Street is the day I die too. This next poem was inspired by a tiny origami bird that one of my son's lovely friends made for me. It was just a scrap of paper that she folded and folded, and then suddenly this magic happened and it was a little bird and it got me daydreaming, and then this poem came along. Shopping list bird. A shopping list or other scrapped reminder at her hand was turned into a bird. Subtle plumage, pencil grey, blue biro, corner wings both folded tight with words. She popped it on the shelf above the fireplace, midst the candles, postcards, matches, dust. It nested still and silent as a library, thoughts kept closed inside and voices hushed. That night I heard the sound of something moving. Paper fanning noises creased the air. On tiptoed breath I peeped inside to see the little bird no longer roosted there. Above my head the folded feathers fluttered. Hole-punched eye looked carefully around. Its geometric head moved at right angles. A small triangle beak typed whispered sounds. And then, for every night that passed thereafter, my pretty little shopping list bird flew, but more and more was drawn to watch the garden, the sky lit rich with moonbeams shining through. One evening came a rustling at that window, left open to bring summer scents inside. My little bird, who had been gently sitting, suddenly flew through the window wide. Outside, the air was thick with susurration, as countless wings unfolded to and fro. Receipts, torn notes and sheets lined deep in poems, now paper birds lit bright in sunset glow. They soared up high towards the setting daytime, sharp set square shapes uncreased into the flight. Such beauty made from what would be discarded, their words flown free at last into the night. And my last poem is called Hope. Thank you again, Damien, so much. It's been such a privilege to be able to share my work. Hope. I want the belief of an ant with a giant leaf, of the Alsatian that escorts its owner down the street, of a herring gull leaving land behind, of a wasp. I don't remember what it used to be like. Just the clatter of freedom like waves on a pebbled shore and eternity's breath on my bare neck. I don't remember how it felt, just the early taste of you, fresh water from a quiet stream. I don't remember much, except the view that embraced me from all directions, a thousand greens stitched together with hope.
Last week on the show, we spent time in Cork, Kilkenny, a hint of the West Coast, and certainly two stop-offs in Dublin. And so today, I am delighted to visit Limerick City here in Ireland for my next guest, who's currently completing his first poetry collection. However, you will undoubtedly recognise his work from places like the Irish Times, Janus Literary Magazine, The Stony Thursday Book, The Poetry Bus, or from appearances on RTE's The Poetry Programme, The Book Show on One, and Sunday Miscellany. Stateside, he is the co-writer and co-performer of the Cedarwood Chronicles with Gavin Friday on U2X Radio, broadcast monthly on the Sirius platform. While here in Ireland, he is a professor by day, leading the module Creative Writing in the Community as part of the University Limerick's MA in Creative Writing. So it is with great honour that I hand you over to Professor Owen Devereux.
Hello, this is Owen Devereux. I'm a writer based in Limerick City, Ireland. I teach on the MA in Creative Writing at the University of Limerick, where I deliver a module called Creative Writers in the Community. I'm going to read four poems for you, and I hope you enjoy them. My first poem is called Francie Murphy. It was anthologised in the Stony Thursday book in 2020 in a collection edited by Martin Dyer. Francie Murphy. Early spring, butter-palmed Francie Murphy, aged 54, breaks solid ground. Using his father's gravel-sharpened spade, he slices sods, loam, heavy clay. Just 8 inches down, he unearths the scraggy remains of an angry young man in a hurry. Midsummer, green-kneed Francie Murphy culls bottle blonde scotch grass, rhubarb dock leaves, blow-in weeds, foot-tall electric nettles, bottle green rushes, dandelions, ragwort, nodding thistles. In the luxuriant lazy beds, egged on by the rotting fronds of spring-tide seaweed, Francie Murphy plays God, choosing which leggy seedlings to kill with his bare-knuckled hands. late autumn, stout-bellied from his marriage to Porter, Francie Murphy wears his mother's size 7 rushers, taking treacle steps over 19 and a half damp acres, small fields reclaimed by his father's father, each of them named as you would a newly baptized child. He plucks the dregs of blackberries, haws and hazelnuts from the brazen hedges, already hoary with mildew, frost and puka spit. In the grey light of the hardest of winters, just 3 weeks short from reaching half a century plus 5, Francie Murphy stands by the oxblood barn door. A cincture of rope secures his 3 coats as he stews on the bones of his life, with no one but a mongrel bitch for company. This poem is called The Bull Field. I grew up on a corporation estate in Limerick City, which was named Kennedy Park after the late President John F. Kennedy. But before that, it was known by all and sundry as the Bull Field. The fields were used to store turf, obviously house animals, as the name suggests, and the fields were farmed by inmates from the local psychiatric hospital, St. Joseph's. The Bull Field. On All Souls' Day, I knelt down on the mottled tundra clay. Below, at ground level, I could faintly hear the murmurings of madmen, buried nameless in the pauper's grave. Simple men like Cecil Murphy and Brendan Plunkett, let out for the day, to belly crawl over damp drills, hand-picking potatoes, savoy, cabbage, carrots and mangels. Abled-bodied innocents like Matty Keane and Pa O'Brien, chopping wood or ricking turf, thrown the odd players or woodbine as payment for their toil. Tormented men like Jim Sullivan and Dinny Ryan, fattening pigs with sour milk and potato skins, slopping out greeny brown scutter from their pens, dumped in silence at first light from the back of a red Ford tractor in exchange for bed and board in the madhouse named after the patron saint of workers. I'm particularly proud of this next poem. It's called The Bodhi Tree. It was published by Hennessy New Irish Writing in the Irish Times in 2017, and it was subsequently shortlisted for a Hennessy Award for Poetry in early 2018. The Bodhi Tree. We weren't that surprised when Paddy Brazel pointed it out to us, for he had a weather eye for such things. A hazel tree sprouting in the left-hand corner of our trim suburban tablecloth garden, and for all our weeding and trimming, spraying and mowing, we'd never noticed it. Paddy knew how to read clouds, why a clamour of rooks would swoop in the evening air, how there'd be a hard winter where the best wild mushrooms were. He minded our tree as if it were his own. In early spring, he hurled it its new catkins. In summer, he peered through the green cloaked branches to see if the house sparrows had fashioned a home. In autumn, he harvested its tanned fruits one by one. He knew that we live just once, that there is no such thing as heaven, that we all return to the earth to begin the cycle again. I'm going to finish with an extract from a much longer poem called Ordnance Survey 1974. The poem is set on Mulgrave Street in Limerick, sometimes known as the Street of the Mad, the Dead and the Bad. We have just met a character in the poem called Bisto, and Bisto is about to return to the psychiatric hospital St. Joseph's, where he lives. Bisto's scribbled list doesn't vary very much. a golden pimple-necked quart of Lucasade for poor, demented Jackie Stritch, a few loose players for Mad Mary, the Examiner for Father Tom Tracy, a bar of fries for Jimmy Morrissey, hair clips and rouge for Michael the Lady. When his errands are complete, Bisto will return to Joseph's, where straight jacketed time is counted by the asylum's four-faced clock. The days of ice-cold baths are long gone, banished like the all-seeing eyes of the governor's panopticon. In these more enlightened days, the tormented are treated with wonder drugs, talk therapy and ECT. I continue my stroll, nodding at a few more familiar faces, broken men and women whose countenances are marked with the crow's feet of poverty. I pass the gaunt Victorian villas on the left-hand side of the street. Baruch House is my next stop, constructed in 1880 AD, a lofty red-bricked house built for a horse dealer with notions. Just last week, an obituary in the Times of London revealed that his famous writer daughter was sadly deceased. 200 yards up the street, just across from the pike, the fair green wall is beginning to crumble. White, hand-painted words boldly proclaim, "Kemi for the council." I first heard of Big Jim at my grandmother's funeral. Under a black mantilla, a pillar of the community asked, "What's that fucking communist doing here?" The solid stonemason stayed at the back of the cathedral, quietly paying his respects. I cross the forked road, continuing on my way. My quarry this morning is to find the final resting place of Ellen Sharkey, aged 53 in 1855. Ellen was the very first to be placed under the stony, loamy soil at Spittleland, location 90A. For 6 years, the wealthy of the town refused to be buried alongside the poor, starving and demented. This was finally resolved by creating separate quarters for the poor and the quality. Who says death has no hierarchy?
For our next journey across the seas, we're going all the way to India, a land that thankfully I have managed to visit, even if it was just for 24 hours in the middle of a work trip to China, but it was still one of the most incredible and inspiring places I've ever been to. This guest is a poet, editor, writer, and the founder of the surreal poetry website Olive Skins, while also running her own WordPress site, My Valiant Souls blog. Her debut collection, Crimson Skins, was recently published, and her work has also appeared in places such as Madras Courier, Modern Literature, Two Drops of Ink, Dying Dahlia Review, and most recently, with five poems in Sunday Morning's River Anthology. I am so pleased to welcome to Eat the Storms the wonderful Devika Mathur.
Hi everyone, this is Devika. And I come from the country of favorite culture, India. Before beginning my poems, I would like to express gratitude to Damien for inviting me to recite my poems on this wonderful platform. The first poem is called Stillness. The voice cracks in the summer sun. I hear things falling apart underneath my doorknob, behind the cobweb, almost gone now. I hear things decaying, distorted as the morning yawn, the leaves so parched, the sun cold and warm. There is a music that stops playing as I write this, the music that speaks about fallen dreams, listless curvature of atmosphere. Stillness is what I observe, stillness in my body, my toes and lips. The earth so happy and warm now, almost like a cerulean sadness, torn into threads of bruises, into diverse sects of lemon-dried faces. The hands so small and white, with my bosom hanging restlessly on the table. There are things so peculiar occurring everywhere, yet restless, yet a still monochrome pattern of life. The second poem is called No Space to Love. The poppies won't die tonight. I sense the drama through the bleeding faces again, the parched vase of you and me, the horizon of us. A hallowing question to that equation. The fields seem opaque, dreary, with whites and flowers. I run and burn to sniff your presence, to sniff the existence, the love equation to the sky and to things beyond. My feet seem to be the courier of a love poems. Enthralled and quiet, almost like a woman lost in translation. Chips and frost, cold, barren, as if a tree unfolded a leaf so huge. The love rises and sings and stings. It breaks and fills the spaces with things so small, almost like a hurricane. Moths fluttering. There is no place left to make love, not between such damp sheets at last. My third poem is called The Hunt. But the sorrow never ends. The tongue that runs cold due to platonic threads of sins and cold meadows. The ache is blooming each day beneath the blue unfolded eyes. The color green now a tone of burning bodies. This is my survival song, you see. With lines cryptic, sunset on my lap, the night never fades away. Soil enriched with the glint of my water. My heavy, overwhelming, collapsing lungs, this poem shall not soothe you. Instead, would ask you to hunt something more than air, water, sun, fire, in your neighborhood, above the fallen leaves, dry tongues, neck choking, about things so unpleasant you would not otherwise want to know. I would like to end my poem renditions with the last one, which is called A Day in My Life. A day in my life, dreams, poppies, an evening by myself, a half-baked conversation alone, breakfast, dinner, and then sleep cycle. Nobody. Cactus on my elbow, lost roots. Circles, thick, a half-eaten pie. Water on the cheeks instead of the spring. Small eyes, pink, blue skies, nothing on my palm. Too small. End of the day, end of the life.
My next guest on the show today has been known to me for a long time, thanks to Twitter and its fantastic poetry community. So therefore, it is with enormous pleasure that we take our second trip today over to the United States for a poet born and raised in North Carolina. She is the author of two chapbooks, Dawn's Fool from Ice Flow Press and Tuned from Sedition Editions, which you can find the links to on the blog post for today's episode over at www.eatthestorms.com. Her work has appeared in print and online in many magazines, including Janus Literary Magazine, Sledgehammer, Bear Creek, All Name Magazine and Parenthesis. It is with joy that I welcome to Eat the Storms for the first time, Kyla Hubolt.
Hello, Damien. Thank you for offering this space for people to read poems. The first piece I'm going to read is called Grief is Not a Magic Spell, and it appears in my chapbook, Tuned. Grief is not a magic spell. The point is, it's all dying. What difference does it make, fast or slow? The point is to love it while it goes. This whole created world, temporary as a motel. Putting down roots is good to do. Make a life, get to know the neighbors. Big old tree down on the trail took some neighbors with it when it fell. Life still in the phloem, but heart rot weak. All it took was one big wind. All it takes is one bird to start the morning. One big wind brings down the house. There may be nothing here. That's the joke. Dream journal. A log of dreams I don't remember may come back if called. Glossolalia. Goes up in smoke. Candle smoke. Incense. Wood fire. Tobacco. Once the monks lined up along the seashore, high on a mountain. Impossible, but I won't forget them. Sitting back to front, waves breaking over each right shoulder, stitching it together. Imagine frozen wind, sand like ice crystals. They sit there forever, breath like an engine, motor of the world. Sitting there, until that bird finishes building its mountain, ending us. This next piece is called Money Over Easy. It's always Monday somewhere. They serve weird salad in the breakfast cafe. Sidewalks click back to heel steps. Five things happened in order, and yes, yes, you do, and heaven has heard of it. Officer, please, I wanted science. Silence fills pockets with lint. Peace, a fluttering migration brings itself down at night, in a land where the locals have never heard of Monday. Hang their laundry on ghost drones, who fly slowly to catch the sailing wet sheets, the numerous socks, forever unmatched, each color alone. Vacancy. Old two-story brick building, white paint peeling off, weeds growing out the roof. Move in. Dirty spillway creek. Tiny fishes swim back and forth under small patches of water weeds, rail broken off. Walk down to the creek side, right there. Traffic noise gets quieter. They can't kick me out if they can't find me. Starlight. This one's a little hard to read. I'm going to try. It's hard to read because it's a prose poem and there's no line breaks. So I'll give this a shot. It's called Forgotten. And I know this is a favorite of some friends, so I want to include it here. One thing we've forgotten is how lovely it is for everyone to have a frog. Your frog can sit in your bathtub, or if you have one in your yard, preferably a shady area because it needs dampness. Your frog will sing to you, though it may take a while for the frog to compose the appropriate arias meant for you and you alone. When it does so, you will suddenly drop everything you are doing and listen to the most glorious hypnotic love song, a love song to the whole universe, but to you as that universe. And without any words, the frog will convey to you that you and you alone have a unique and precious role to play in the unfolding of all that is to happen next. As you listen to this magical singing, you realize that you have known what to do all along, that it is just exactly what you have always done and been doing, and all is well. And the frog has given you permission to be your own deity. And the wonder of it is how very good this feels, even though nothing at all has changed except that now you have your frog. Next, I'm going to read this one. It's called To Be a Gun. Turn the desert blue, it looks like sea. Turn it red, blood. What is it like to be a gun? No malls here, no shopping plazas filled with flesh ready for the coffin. Up in my room, no one can shoot me. There behind the hidden stars. My window over a hill. Nothing outside with an aim. But what is it like to be a gun? I hate you. Still, let's wander in the desert for a while. Look, smell, hear, lonely crunch of sand under heel. What is to be done? Finally, I'm going to offer this one called Three Sails. By coffee, I mean three sails in view, little triangles on a page. Neighborish sounds in the window, car radio rings, a couple bars of tune. That was then. Now birds chime the sky. It blinds itself rising. By rising, I mean later on we may or may not wake up. By sleep, I mean nothing I said is intended for testing. Rise up down the other. By other, I don't mean us. I mean then. I mean time. I mean now. Thank you so much. Actually, all of these pieces appear in my chapbook Tuned.
My next guest on Storms Today is the second guest that's been on the podcast to take us to Baltimore in Maryland. Although previous to settling there with his wife and daughter, he has spent 4 years living in Latin America and 15 years living in Austria. The Latin American influences are clearly evident in his writing, as he is the author of 2 volumes of creative nonfiction about Ecuadorian shamanism and is the translator of 3 volumes of Ecuadorian fiction, 1 volume of Venezuelan poetry, and the autobiography of the last shaman chief of the Sicopai people of the Amazon rainforest. And he is certainly bringing the forest with him today in his readings. His work has appeared in Ash, The Cynical, Dragibus, Psychedelic Press UK, Global City Review, The Michigan Quarterly Review, and many more. I am very pleased to hand you over to the teacher, writer, translator, and proofreader that is the excellent Nathaniel D. Horowitz.
Hi, Damien. Thanks for having me on your show. Hi, listeners. I have some poems for you. First piece is called A Fast Braider, and it's made up of things my daughter said when she was 5, 6, and 7. Dad, what are we for? What is the grass for? What is a street for? What is a train for? What is a bicycle for? What is a tree for? What is a bird for? Dad, are cats' shadows the color of our shadows? Dad, that little tree is like a giant tree for tiny people. They're as big as our eyes, and they squeak. Why can't I make marmalade out of myself? Dad, can a donut make music? Dad, am I tall for my size? Dad, what's a period of space? Dad, how do you braid leaves? Dad, am I a fast braider? Dad, behind our little teeth, do we have big tusks? Dad, sometimes I suck up video words and pronounce them in the human world. Dad, you know what I want? A big, thick car. And it should look exactly like our house. Dad, do you know why I give you presents? No, why? Because you have a really cute face. Do you know why? No, why? Because you look like a baby with a mustache. Dad, how do you know you have green eyes? Did the cats tell you? Dad, why do werewolves only come in carnivore and not vegetarian? Dad, I'm going to write a story. And do you know how many humans it has in it? 6,000. Dad, did I tell you? You're a really sweet older father. Dad, do you know why I became a monster? No, why? Because it's too hard for the wind to move the sun by itself. Dad, one time in the night time I counted up to 40 or 50 or 300. Dad, do you know what tomorrow is? It's the 1,000th day of the year. I would like to live in the sky without being dead and have a slide to my kindergarten. I don't like coffee, but I love alcohol. I was born in alcohol. I am an alcohol fairy, and I live in Rainland, in the biggest, thickest raindrop. I forgot. I have to keep my mouth closed. My mouth is the door of the angels that live inside me. I am their house. My bones are their slide. And the next three poems are three shorter jungle poems that I wrote in Ecuador in 1997. First one is called Awake at Night in the Forest. I love punctuation marks, cat's cradles, white bread, mayonnaise, all kinds of cheese, lettuce, tomato, a little onion. I love the river rising at dusk with a noise like the ocean, rising all night, bearing branches and whole trees to the sound of the rain. I love cicadas droning musically all night in stereo, and crickets calling thoughtfully for love and attention. I love family and friends, friends and family, and the continuous night that whirls around the world, hiding from the sun, manifesting multitudinous, mellifluous shades of black. Second jungle poem is called Night Moves. A motorboat navigates up river in darkness. One of my friends is snoring. Cicadas are whirring. The candle by whose light I'm writing is losing wax fast, its flame blown by the wind. Insects keep biting my back. I speak with the silent voice I use in dreams. My eyes are speaking their mind, my ears speaking through my writing hand, while a bat navigates upwind in darkness lit by sound. The wind brings out the voice of the trees. I stay up late watching this poem sprout between my hands. All around, tree frogs are singing. And the third jungle poem is called Rhyme with the Wind. Rhyme is reason. That's what the leaves seem to say. The earth gave us so much today. Near Joaquin's old house, a lemon tree bearing grapefruit-sized lemons like wrinkled suns. And later there was a poem in the form of a palm tree leaning over an arcane river. But how those huge lemons rhyme with the sun, the old wrinkly sun. Plants were erupting in the jungle today, like very slow green sparks, and the bellflower bushes keep spitting up huge white flowers to insult and tantalize us. As I write this, my two baby boas are gliding slowly over my hands, flicking their tongues out from time to time to catch molecules drifting along the slowly gliding wind. How these two little snakes rhyme with the wind. And this last piece I'm going to read is a translation from German, the original by Hugo Ramneck, Austrian guy living in Switzerland, playwright and such. It's called The Moon Mad Beast. Good God, what is that weird old beast? Is it an animal at least, howling at the moon on high? Now it's clear I hear its sigh. Or has it yet a different sound? A bark? No, 'tis no belling hound. It's beastly hello. No, it's bellow, turns my face a cheesy yellow. It's garish, marish, bleating verse, a supplication or a curse. What the hell's it doing here, that gray or greenish wolf or deer? The only thing uncontradicted's that the beast is moon-addicted. Did it surge from turgid water like a mega-river otter? I think what kind of thing it is I'd have to ask a scientist. Is it a dragon born too soon on this riverbank of doom? A sick and groaning water sprite weeping in the loony night? Or is it yet a giant louse that wandered from a stately house? Did Dr. Frankenstein create it? Alcohol intoxicate it? Or is it highly strung and kind, crestfallen at its own sad mind? Is it an existential banshee that ain't at all, but only can be? Alone among the other fauna, did it spring here from Nirvana? Is it in fact a brand new being on the sand discreetly peeing? Did it streak here from a distant planet, sucking on a pomegranate, clinging to a dusty comet, trying only not to vomit? Yes, maybe it's an alien. That's why it speaks mammalian with beastly hellos. No, with bellows. I do so hope the thing soon mellows. Its nature I will never know while through this mad old world I go. I ask the moon, but get no answer from that sleepy necromancer, that meditative white balloon. Away above us floats the moon. Across the sky he slowly slips. No mantra moves his silver lips. And so the mad beast lost the moon, despite its hello bellow tune, and its garish marish bleating verse. Its supplication, or its curse, was silenced by the universe.
My last guest on the show today is a returning guest to Eat the Storms, and you know there is nothing that I enjoy more than someone who wants to come back and share more of their work on this podcast. He is a poet, short fictionalist, historian and photographer whose work has appeared internationally since 1965. His collections include Poems Against Cancer, Pictures, Postcards and Letters from Kelsey Books, and The River Singing from Workhouse Writers Press. First with us for episode 8 of season 3, which you can listen to right after this show ends, but for now, back with us, this is the sensational Leonard Lund.
The cafe is tiny, so the chairs are drawn close, giving more space to what will still be a crowded dance floor. When she takes the empty spot, smoothing her skirt, the back of her hand brushes the stranger's thigh. At the moment she crosses her right leg to the left, he does the opposite, not looking, so the base of his calf rests most briefly on the top of her foot. This is how the path runs, the things that lead from chances to choices. Two roads from here. If neither blushes, neither makes a sound, a road will split again by closing time. He to his empty house, she to her silent apartment. Or they might let first words and glances lead to a Madison, a two-step, a single destination. Wait, watch. One will happen in two heartbeats, the other two in one. After Mexico, 1934, a photograph by Henri Cartier-Bresson. Dime, she wanted, lo que recuerdos de Mexico. Whatever your heart calls up about that first night, about afterwards, the sound of water lapping shore through the open window, our bodies entangled like seaweed at spring tide, our breathing no louder than walking the shore, hand in hand through infinite fog. Dime algo, something you've never said aloud. Dear Prudence, Tommy took a photograph of us that day at his parents' lake, mailing it to you before returning to the war that didn't give him back. You're in the middle ground, topless, leaning against a tree, saying something to one of us. I'm not sure what the order of importance should be in that captive moment. In the foreground, I sit at a table, fully clothed until later, my head turned to catch what you've said when it gets to me. The background, the woods on the far shore that history tells we'll swim to, where your wet hair will fall across my face, is a hazy future, not yet considered, and not now forgotten. You sent me the picture for keeping while you were in Spain, a memory, but not a promise. On the surface of the lake, you left a gentle imprint of your lips. Questions for Izzy. What does your hand become when you catch a firefly? If you hold your fingers just so, is it a flickering lantern to help trace your lifeline? Though a very human act, is it a wise one? If you squeeze hard, does your palm become a bright and foolish stain you'll never wash away? Where does your hand go when you release a ladybug? Laugh if you want. I know it stays here, part of you, but you stay right there in bed while you fly away in dreams. So, do your fingers follow, pulling the strings of your swelling heart to make it follow?
Thank you so much to all my guests on today's show. That leaves me with just enough time to leave you with three final poems. These three poems all have a common theme, perhaps a certain want, a yearning, a lust, and a loss. The first poem, Learning to Climb Walls, was featured in the Pride issue of the Adriatic magazine. The second poem was featured in the inaugural issue of the wonderful Famidan Journal. And the last poem I wrote just this week for the Prompt Combo, which is a poetry prompt that this week was hosted by Robin McNamara on Twitter. Learning to climb walls. There can be earthquakes in little towns, far from tectonic plates. On little streets where we sat once, with the summer burning through our cluelessness, trembling beneath attractions we didn't have the words to understand. A local boy and Sandy heard student of exchange, and I wanted to exchange, to uncover all that was growing curious. We sat once on a wall, in the kiss of youth's sunlight, in the shifting days of undulating innocence and the growing tension of every question and that temptation. And I wanted nothing more than to touch that temptation unfolding between us. Two boys beginning to join the colors that made blue beneath the weight of all that nothingness that never trembled longer than a month in the summer, when our legs occasionally touched like tectonic plates. There can be earthquakes in little towns. This next poem is from the inaugural issue of Famidan Journal and is called You. I hid your name between a word, I put this word into a line, crammed with so much content, where you'd disappear between the syntax and then, just in case. I tucked this line into a story that unfolded over time, into a tale that would tell of a book that someone lost on the wrong beach while waiting for the right wave to take them out to where there was nothing but the depth of that deep blue. I hid you in a word, in a line, in a story that told a tale, in a book. And then I placed you, the smallest part of you, into a bigger hole, like I was reconstructing an onion, like I was resealing a Russian doll inside all her bigger sisters. And every now and then, I steal moments while they sleep and sink into a chair, into the book, behind the tale within the story until I come across the line, reach around and find you there, still, tucked in tight behind that word. Where I kept your name. And finally, for Robin McNamara's prompt combo, a poetry prompt on Twitter this week. This is called Dance Floor Distractions. Your Cork accent like honest air in a club staple, reeking of styled London queens. Catching sight of myself in the rim of your spectacles, being seen under arousal of a drumbeat we didn't own. Even after I named he who I hadn't brought out, your want held no wane, and I, darker than the white of my flesh, the road from Paris to London to loss, and the permanence of Hampstead and its pillars and 2.4 expectations. He never wanted to dance, so I'd left my steps, still packed in a case, under the bed like dust awaiting the vacuum. You wore white shoes over your Cork accent, in a Soho club on Sunday afternoon that pretended it was night amid other illusions. I didn't want to leave him, but I'd come so far that it seemed rude to turn away from being seen, albeit but temporary trust. On the dance floor, in those spectacles, I saw how I'd let your lips find my mouth later, parched and trembling from the pillars I couldn't find my way down from. Your Cork accent, like honest air, on a Sunday in Soho, far from anything honest. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, we've reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly and I've been the host and producer of this show, and thank you so much for tuning in, whether that's been on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, CastBox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. As always, a huge thank you to the guests who make this show possible, and today they have been Charlotte Oliver, Owen Devereaux, Davika Matur, Kala Hubolt, Nathaniel Horowitz, and Leonard Lund. For details of all of my guests on the show, please head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, click on the podcast section, and there you will find a blog post for all of the episodes. This was episode 7, season 4, and in that post you will find photos, bios, and links to find, follow, and support all of these fantastic poets. Before we go today, a few things to note. First of all, a huge congratulations to Margaret Royal, who launched her collection Immersed in Blue last Sunday on Zoom, and I got to be the host for that amazing event, where she was joined by a fantastic lineup of poets. Her new collection, Immersed in Blue, is published by Inspired Press and available now. This Thursday, my friend and fellow poet Eileen De Puer and myself are heading up to Belfast to pick up our copies of our conversational poetry pamphlet we co-wrote together in the Jitterfritz of Neon, and to begin the recording of our launch show in the company of Belfast Belles Gaynor Kane and Karen Mooney, and hoping for a little visit from Cathy Carson too. So keep an eye out on our social media platforms for more details of next weekend's launch. So from me, Damien B. Donnelly, it's goodbye for now, but I will be back with you again next week from 5 p.m. on your preferred podcast platform. But of course, we are a pre-recorded podcast, so you can tune in at any time that suits you, whether it is to shrug off those Monday morning blues, the evening drive times, or on Sunday mornings that should be oh so easy. Then we are here to ensure that you, as always, stay bloody poetic.